It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
In any trial, all relevant witnesses must be heard. Any Republican senator who says there should be no witnesses or even that witnesses should be negotiated is part of the cover-up.
Let's bring in the witnesses. Let's put the truth before the American people.
We don't know what witnesses will be allowed and even if we'll be allowed witnesses.
I also want to hear witnesses and see the new evidence.
And we believe that a fair trial involves witnesses.
Let's call the witnesses.
Yeah, so that's the talk in the Senate this week as the trial begins tomorrow for the president's impeachment. Sandy Rios with you on this Monday morning. But a very interesting twist on this. Well, let me just first of all let you hear Lindsey Graham. Lindsey, of course, is now the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and he has a lot to say about how it's going to be, the trial is going to be handled in the Senate. Mitch McConnell is the kingpin, but Lindsey Graham has a big voice, too. Let's hear what his response is.
If we call one witness, we're going to call all the witnesses. There's not going to be a process where the Democrats get their witnesses and the president gets shut out. When it comes to Donald Trump, Nancy Pelosi may pray for him privately, but she's orchestrated the Church of Holy from the time Trump has been sworn in to now. You took 48 days to impeach this president. You did not allow him to call any witnesses. He could not have a lawyer present during the House Intel Committee. This has been a partisan railroad job. What they're doing to the presidency is a danger to the institution itself.
Yes, and it is. And I told you that when this goes to the Senate, we are not on safe ground. We're not. We're just not. And so, but I want to give you some optimism, because Senator Rand Paul has kind of jumped into the fray here. He's basically saying that we know this, that many of the Republicans want to call witnesses. Why, they want to have kind of a little, I think it's kind of their moment in the sun, personally, including Mitch McConnell. Others say, well, the president needs to be able to call witnesses because he needs to vindicate himself. That's true. But I'm telling you that if they bring in witnesses, it's going to turn into a circus. And many people are concerned that Adam Schiff, who is heading the House Managers Team, that means the prosecution against the president, will then take control of the Senate in some measure. So Rand Paul is kind of interjecting himself into the fray here. And he basically said last week that he feared that some Republicans are going to vote for witnesses. And we'll get those, the ones the Democrats want. And then when we have the votes on bringing witnesses or letting the president choose his witnesses, I think those will fail. Not only because of those Republicans, but because a whole variety of Republicans may not allow the whistleblower, may not allow Biden for one reason or another because they served with him. But this is what Rand Paul is warning them he's going to do. He's thought this through. He says, look, if you GOP senators who say you want witnesses vote for witnesses, then I am going to demand that Hunter Biden be subpoenaed. I'm going to put that on the floor, and then you're going to have to deal with that. Because that's what they're afraid of. Oh, they can't, you know, it's the collegiality of the Senate. They can't have, you know, go after Joe Biden. They served with him. That would be just horrible to go after his son. It'd be fine if Adam Schiff wanted to call witnesses against the president. But, oh, not the Bidens. Don't go there. And so Rand Paul's saying, I guarantee you, you vote for witnesses, and my first order will be demanding a subpoena for Hunter Biden. And so it's kind of already a war setting out in, I think it's going to be very interesting. It's going to be distressing in some ways, and I'm going to be nervous until it's over, to be honest with you. Senate Majority Leader McConnell is preparing a resolution that would allow President Trump's team, his legal team, to move immediately to dismiss the impeachment charges if they so choose. Now, there's contradictory information about this. Josh Hawley, who was pressing for that, Senator Hawley, and rightfully so, he wanted a dismissal of both the articles of impeachment. But Senator Hawley is saying that in Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's resolution, There is still room to do that, to dismiss. If things get out of hand, there's room to call for dismissal. So we hope that he's true. Some are pushing back on that. I don't know. And of course, it's a thing in progress. It's all happening so quickly. How would we actually know? But McConnell has already, you know, said early on that our members feel that we have an obligation to listen to the arguments. Now, you know what? I'm telling you, I think those members feel like they want some time on camera. That's what I think. That's my personal opinion. I think those that are Trump supporters don't want this. They think it's a mistake. It has to be very controlled or it's going to get out of hand. And again, it's going to turn into a Kavanaugh hearing. I also saw that, you know, McConnell is really trying to control the legal team of the president. This is just an impression I have, okay? But my understanding is that they've been told not to use sharp language in their briefs, to save that for cable television and tweets. They said they have to use mild language in their responses. Really? Is that not typical of the Republican establishment? Yes, it is. The president has issued his 7-page response. It's very strong. I think I wish I could read it to you. I was planning on doing that, but I have so many other things to tell you. It says that the articles of impeachment are a dangerous attack on the right of the American people to freely choose their president. It's brazen, unlawful, and it's an attempt to overturn the results of the 2016 election and interfere with the 2020 election just months away. It's highly partisan, reckless. It's an obsession with impeaching the president that began the day he was inaugurated and continues now. The president categorically and unequivocally denies each and every allegation in both articles of impeachment. The president reserves all rights and all available defenses to the articles of impeachment. And then it goes to the end with its conclusion, and it says the articles of impeachment violate the Constitution. They are defective in their entirety. They are the product of an invalid proceeding that flagrantly denied the president any due process rights. They rest on dangerous distortion of the Constitution that would do lasting damage to our structure of government. And then it takes on each article. It ends by saying, in order to preserve our constitutional structure of government, to reject the poisonous partisanship that the framers warned against, to ensure one-party political impeachment vendettas do not become the new normal, and to vindicate the will of the American people, the Senate must reject both articles of impeachment. It says a lot more than that, but it's signed by the president's two chief White House. Jay Sekulow is his private attorney. Pat Cipollone is White House counsel. Now, he's added to his team. Those guys are the lead, but he's added to his team Ken Starr and Alan Dershowitz, which is very, very interesting, would require more conversation. And, you know, tomorrow we'll get into that because tomorrow starts the impeachment process in the House. But I want to go back to something that's happening today. You know, in November in Virginia, the Democrats swept the both houses, the Senate and the House, and now they have Ralph Northam, the one that wants, you know, abortion up until the baby's been born. You can kill it. If the mother agrees, you just put it in a quiet, comfortable place until you decide how to do it. That's Governor Northam. So, you know, on that basis, you can imagine the nightmare that the people of Virginia are facing right now. Today, we're going to focus on a gun rally that's taking place at the Capitol in Richmond sometime today. We'll find out in a minute with our guest exactly when. I know that people are beginning to arrive already this morning. Griff Jenkins talked about it on Fox this morning. Let's listen to Griff.
Let me give you a look here. You can see this is outside Virginia's state capitol where Lobby Day will happen. Now, every year, the Virginia Citizens Defense League, a pro-Second Amendment group, comes out here, lobbies lawmakers before the legislature starts. Well, this year, the legislature is totally Democrat-controlled. The Senate, the House, and, of course, Governor Ralph Northam. Now, he's got this fence and security because, in his words, there were credible threats made against the rally that will take place here in a few hours. The gates open at 7. There was, of course, 3 people arrested last week with ties to a white supremacist group. But when it comes to the laws that people are rallying against, they've already passed 3 measures in the Senate here, and it would do 3 things essentially. One is it would restore a 1 handgun a month law. It would also do universal background checks, and it would increase local authority over guns in public places. And we spoke with one of the House delegates, a Republican, Glenn Davis, yesterday. He's from the Virginia Beach area, where you recall that horrific shooting that killed 12 in this past May. Well, he says the opposition to these measures is bipartisan. Listen.
It definitely is bipartisan. I've had Democrats come to me and say, Glenn, I'm a Democrat, but this is extremely important to me. This isn't a little bit of a tax hike here or some other issue there. This is the ability to protect your family and your loved ones. And that's not a Republican or a Democrat issue.
And guys, they're expecting such large numbers because those three measures we mentioned are not where it's going to end. The House Democrats have several other measures. One in particular, you mentioned, Pete, House Bill 567, that would essentially outlaw private shooting ranges. And we spoke to the Colonial Shooting Academy owner, Peyton Galante. She's very worried about it. Listen.
All right, I'm going to interrupt you, Griff, because he interviews her and she just says, why are they trying to outlaw, you know, indoor shooting ranges? We train people to be the best gun managers she didn't say on the globe, but I'm saying that, and let them come here and see, but they don't care about that. But you see the point. Virginia is under assault on Second Amendment and other things too, which we'll get to on a different date. They are after everything. Abortion rights, gender, everything. It's a nightmare in Virginia. And I'm telling you right now, If the United States, the rest of the states, do not pay attention, every single state is going to go the way of Virginia. Virginia is experiencing a nightmare. We'll make that case today on the Second Amendment. We'll talk about other issues on a different day. But I want to go back in time and remind you of what's been happening this past 3 years. Does anybody remember seeing images of people, leftists, protesting in the streets, blocking traffic, attacking Trump supporters in public places with their hats, interrupting during the inaugural, assaulting people with paint and other objects, throwing things on them, the Women's March. Does anybody remember this year of assaults, Trump supporters bloodied everywhere? Anybody remember conservatives being harassed on campus in very dangerous ways? Anybody remember Steve Scalise being shot nearly to death at a baseball field in Alexandria by a Bernie Sanders supporter who intended to shoot many, many other people? Anybody remember the dangers of this past 3 years? Because if you do, I want to bring to mind to you that remember the Bernie Sanders reporter, the field operator in Iowa, was caught by James O'Keefe off camera. We played it last week for you. He said that if Bernie Sanders is not elected, Milwaukee, if he does not get the nomination at the Democratic convention, Milwaukee will burn. Police officers will be shot. If Bernie Sanders should win, Trump supporters will be rounded up and put in re-education camps. People at MSNBC, because they are disarmed, by the way, will be people in the media will be lined up against the wall and shot. Oh, he went on. He was very eloquent. Very, very eloquent about his plans. And would you know, his name is Kyle Jurek, and I just want to point out to you that not a single person, this has hardly been reported, he has not been fired. The people at that campaign headquarters in Iowa have sort of locked down, they've gotten off social media. Bernie Sanders has not distanced himself. Kyle Jurek has not been fired. No other Democratic candidate has condemned anything that he has said. Let that sink in. And then I want to go back and I want to just tell you something that you probably have no way of knowing unless you're older and you pay attention to this stuff like I do. But does anybody remember the Weather Underground? Anybody remember how dangerous they were? They were in 1969 and in the 70s. They were the revolutionary communists. It was Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn and others. There was an undercover FBI infiltrator that I actually interviewed a number of years ago named Larry Grathwall. He's dead now. And he did an interview with Bill Ayers in 1969. And he was, at the time, Bill thought he was part of the Weather Underground. And he asked the Weather Underground leaders about the aftermath of taking over the government. What would they do with Americans who resisted the revolution? Grathwall says they told him some such Americans would go into re-education camps in the Southwest. Any who couldn't be re-educated in the new way of thinking would need to be eliminated. When asked for an estimate of how many that might need to be killed, Grathwall reports Ayers and company told him about 25 million people. Bill Ayers was at the University of Illinois Circle campus for years. He's still very deeply involved. His wife, Bernadine Dorn, is at Northwestern University. I'm telling you, this threat is real. And that's why the situation in Virginia is as dangerous for all of us as you think it is. So stay tuned. We're going to talk more about that with one of the leaders of the rally today, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
Do you pray for the Great Commission? Hi, it's Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word since 1938 for only $5 a Bible. At Bible League, we pray that His kingdom will come, and we see it coming in the lives of new Christians eager to grow in the grace and knowledge of Jesus by having their own Bible.
The need for a change is through the Word of God.
It is so important for the Bible, the Word of God, to be made available in whatever languages that are needed by people.
People now are very open to hear the gospel.
Whoever comes and is able to give us a Bible, it will be better than giving us food to eat.
You know, this pastor in Africa is not denying the need for physical nourishment, but he's stressing the need for spiritual nourishment for new believers who cannot access a Bible because they live under corrupt governments or among majority religions that persecute. Will you learn more about becoming a blessing in this kingdom work by visiting SendBiblesNow.org. SendBiblesNow.org or call 800-YES-WORD. 800-YES-WORD.
Blind Eyes Opened, a Christian documentary exposing the sex trafficking industry and highlighting survivors' transformations through Christ.
It's happening somewhere right now.
We oftentimes turn a blind eye.
Our children are being used for the commercial sex trade.
The United States of America is one of the largest consumers of human trafficking.
You have no idea what a sex trafficked victim's life is like.
At the Planned Parenthood facility where I work, so I was having them sign these consent forms, sometimes for their 16th, 17th abortion procedure.
Where is God in all of this? And God immediately replies, "Where are you?"
Committed to ending the atrocities while showing Christ as the hope for all involved. More information is available at blindeyesopened.com. That's blindeyesopened.com. Parental discretion is strongly advised.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of champions for Christ at liberty.edu/starnes.
The Crave Coffee Bar in Arlington, Tennessee was packed with teenagers drinking coffee and studying for exams when the unthinkable happened. A car plowed through the building. There were as many as 30 young people inside the popular hangout spot, and first responders surely imagined they would be facing a mass casualty event. But it turns out only four teenagers were hurt. No serious injuries, just cuts and scrapes and bruises. Some would say the young people were lucky. But Lana Hickey, the owner of the coffee bar, tells me there was divine intervention. Mrs. Hickey says she watched the surveillance video of the crash, and she believes she saw God's hand literally moving the teenagers out of danger. Every child moved by at least an inch. A reminder that God is always there, always watching, tending His flock. Be sure to check out the latest edition of my Toddcast podcast. It's a free download at toddstarnes.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We have received credible intelligence from our law enforcement agencies that there are groups with malicious plans for the rally that is planned for Monday. This includes out-of-state militia groups and hate groups planning to travel from across the country to disrupt our democratic process with acts of violence. They are not coming to peacefully protest. They are coming to intimidate and to cause harm.
That was Governor Ralph Northam last Thursday from Virginia declaring that this rally that's being held today at Richmond in the Capitol, Second Amendment rally, where gun owners in Virginia, of which there are many, Virginia is, of course, the Commonwealth. It is the place, the home of Thomas Jefferson, of George Washington, of our founding fathers, so many of them. It has such a proud heritage. And it's the Second Amendment was birthed out of the minds of those men because they knew what it was like living under King George, where they were not able to defend themselves and they were completely under tyranny. And so they provided that the American people would have a right to defend themselves, and also in the preamble of the Constitution, to alter or abolish government by force if necessary, if the government overstepped its constitutional duties and started trying to control the people. So it's very ironic that all of this is happening in Virginia, and I'm telling you it's not an accident, because the left would love nothing better. They love these symbols. They love the symbolism of taking down Virginia. John Vileko is with us this morning. He is the president of Gun Owners of America, and he and his group are participating in this rally in Richmond this morning. John, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Sandy, thank you for having me, and good morning to you.
Good morning. John, before we get into the nuts and bolts of what's going on here, could you just give details of the rally? Because people might want to go today, and I honestly couldn't find those. When does it start and where?
The rally, it officially kicks off at 11 o'clock, and it will go till 12, and we have several speakers who are going to be there at the stage. People can go to, at this late time, vcdl.org. And there are instructions there on how to park, and they have buses, shuttle buses running every 3 or 4 minutes. So it's certainly, if you're in Virginia, in the Richmond area, it's not too late to get over there. There are places to park with shuttle buses to get you to the venue. Some of the laws you have been modified. I thought in your introduction it was a good corollary to bring up King George, because he also declared a state of emergency and tried to take away people's guns. And so the governor has done the same. He declared a state of emergency, and there's an area within the rally grounds around the Capitol that is a gun-free zone where firearms are not allowed, but any area outside of that fenced-in area, guns are still permitted. And we expect, I would think, maybe more people outside of the fence, and possibly up to 10,000 people within the secure zone.
John, so help me understand, because I've seen visuals of it, but did the governor put up this fence just because of this rally that's surrounding the Capitol?
Oh, yeah. It's an 8-foot-high chain-link fence with metal detectors allowing people in and out. It has three exits. To me and to a lot of people, this is ludicrous, because we know gun-free zones are the most dangerous areas. Almost all, I mean, in the 90% range of mass shootings occur in gun-free zones. So he set up a kill zone, and we're thankful that, as I said, for every one person inside that zone, there'll be three or four on the outside who are still able to carry guns, because we understand that guns make us safer. Look, the governor talks about a state of emergency, and how much of that is fake news or made up or not. The Second Amendment is for states of emergency. If the government can just declare a state of emergency and suspend the Second Amendment, then the Second Amendment wouldn't have any meaning in the sense that you were talking about earlier, that Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and Patrick Henry meant it to have.
So okay, you're going to have your speakers, and the event is inside the fence, and you guys have to go in there, and you, Gun Owners of America, and the others involved in organizing this cannot carry your guns.
If those of us who go inside the pen,
right, but you're going to be in there because that's where the event is, so you can't carry your guns.
But there will be loudspeakers set up all on the perimeter, so
people
who go still will be able to hear the speakers and see them as well.
All right, so John, you know, the governor, Governor Northam, has made a lot of these so-called neo-Nazi white supremacist groups who he has been alerted to are coming, and they're planning on making trouble, just like Charlottesville. That's his dog whistle from my perspective, mm-hmm. but I'd like to know yours. Why? What's wrong with that? I mean, that makes sense to me, doesn't it? You, Charlottesville was terrible. Shouldn't they lock things down in Richmond to make it safe and not have a repeat of Charlottesville?
Well, certainly we appreciate everything that law enforcement is doing, and we love our brothers and sisters in blue. The fact is, if there are bad actors, there's several points. So one, if people are intending to do harm, and we don't know if that's true or not, believe it when I see it. But the governor's emergency declaration isn't going to stop them. The only people who are going to be affected by the gun ban are the people like you and I who are law-abiding citizens. People who have an evil intent in their heart aren't going to be stopped by that law. Two, Charlottesville was a whole different situation. This rally has been held since 2002 with thousands of people, and for the most of that time, we were able to carry guns and even carry guns inside the Capitol. We were able to, if we had a concealed carry permit, take guns inside the Capitol. And there have been, let's see, how many killings, shootings, maimings? Oh, zero, none. There has never been an incident at this event. So it's ludicrous that the governor, after 18 years, is saying somehow that this is a dangerous situation. And furthermore, in Charlottesville, the one unfortunate fatality was committed with a vehicle, not a firearm.
John, I'm wondering, too, Charlottesville is so much more liberal than Richmond. I'm wondering, a lot of things, everything was different in Charlottesville. And so I don't even know. Do you know if people were allowed to carry weapons at their Charlottesville rally?
I was not there, so I'm not. I mean, Charlottesville, I think if you had a legal concealed carry permit, you would have been able to carry firearms. But as I said, that makes situations less dangerous, not more dangerous. And one of the reasons so many people are coming to this rally are the laws that Governor Northam is proposing, and one of them is to give localities the right to ban guns, so that every county or city in the Commonwealth here could pass their own laws regulating firearms, creating more gun-free zones, more dangerous spots for law-abiding citizens, or on the flip side, creating criminals out of people who refuse to give up their right to self-defense.
That's that red flag laws, right? Where they're so vague, it seems like you just suspect that somebody might be trouble, so you take their guns. I don't know what the mm-hmm. metric is on that.
Yeah, there's the preemption laws that he wants to repeal in Virginia, and then there's the red flag laws where a family member, a disgruntled ex-boyfriend, girlfriend, spouse could say, hey, this person, I feel is a danger, and he owns guns, and you take that to a court, and a judge can take the person's guns away, and the first time you might know about it is when the police come knocking at your door to take your guns. So it creates, not only a situation where Second, Fourth Amendment rights, 14th Amendment rights are suspended, but it creates a dangerous situation for citizens and police, because we saw this in Maryland where a gentleman answered the door in the 5 o'clock dark hour in the morning with a gun, and the police were there to take his guns away. And he didn't know what was up, and it was a struggle, and he ended up being killed. So these are dangerous situations that this governor is creating.
Well, the other thing, too, it looks like they're trying to outlaw indoor gun ranges, which is just why, and on. So there's a real threat. What?
I live less than a mile from a gun range. That's where I teach my children to shoot. That's where my wife and I go to shoot. That's where we train. That's where we practice. That's how we, and people who own guns, we're not Neanderthals as the left likes to think. We know they're dangerous. That's why we buy them. That's why we own them. because you need a dangerous weapon to protect your family, to protect yourself. And gun owners, you know, take that responsibility extremely seriously. You know, gun ownership has been on the rise for decades since Clinton, you know, even back before that in the 1970s when there was a national push to ban handguns. You know, gun ownership has been on the rise steadily since then. But you know what? Gun accidents, accidental discharges, and accidental shootings has been declining every year for decades. So gun owners are among the safest segment of the population. Just look at places like Pennsylvania. You have 1.5 million gun owners in the woods on opening day, and you don't hear about accidents and mayhem like the left would have us believe.
Well, and of course, John, this discussion about things being less safe when people have guns, that's kind of a distraction from what's really happening. And before you joined me, I was going back in time, and based on the Bernie Sanders staffer last week in Iowa, who said that they would line people up and shoot them and eliminate Trump supporters through re-education camps. And I went back to Bill Ayers, the Weather Underground. He said the same thing to the FBI informant who had embedded himself. He said, we will, shoot people who do not go along with, the program here. This is, the point is that the left is dead serious about taking away not only gun rights, but because they don't want you to have any way to fight back. That's really the issue. But I don't think the average American can hear that right now. They can't imagine that it's that bad. But Bernie Sanders, field operator in Iowa, just told us in living color in that undercover video that it is that bad. That really is what's at stake. So, John, why should people show up today? What would be the benefit to do that, to come to that rally at 11 o'clock at the Capitol grounds in Richmond?
Well, there has been a groundswell of support since the elections in November, this past November. Virginia has off-year elections, and Democrats won control of the House, the Assembly, and the Senate, and it already had the governorship. So they have a complete control, and they believe that they have a mandate on gun control because Governor Northam basically sold Virginia to Michael Bloomberg for $4 million in campaign contributions, and he's pushing that Bloomberg Moms Demand Action gun control agenda. And so what we're pushing throughout the state is that, no, you don't have a mandate, that the districts that Democrats won from Republicans came mostly through redistricting and some in Northern Virginia where there's a lot of, it's very liberal area. But for the most part, it was a status quo election. It's just that the legislature was so closely divided anyway, it didn't take much to swing it to the Democrats. So what we're saying is, no, you don't have a mandate on gun control. Michael Bloomberg doesn't own this state. Over 100 counties, cities, and towns in Virginia have passed Second Amendment sanctuary ordinances. You know, the left talks about their sanctuary cities to hide illegal immigrants. In Virginia and in other parts of the country, we have over 100 sanctuary counties and cities that say we will protect our Second Amendment rights. So we want the legislators to know that we are watching. We know what you're trying to do. To your earlier point about Bernie Sanders kind of spilling the beans or his staffer, Governor Northam was asked, well, if you ban quote-unquote assault weapons, are you going to confiscate them if people don't turn them in? He said, we're looking into that. Do you remember Joy Behar? Behar.
Yep.
She said, well, she cautioned the Democrats, if you're going to ban guns and take them away, don't tell them until after the election. And that's what these Democrats are doing. So they have an extreme agenda. And we're uniting people from, every corner of the state, white, black, male, female, young, old, because self-defense is for everyone.
Yes,
and
John,
we want the legislators to know that. And so that's why this overwhelming show of support
Okay.
is going to send that message.
I have to rush you because we're going to be out of time. It starts at 11 this morning. If you want more information on it, those of you in Virginia listening, it's vcdl.org. We'll put that on our Facebook page. John's organization is Gun Owners of America. It's gunowners.org. I encourage you to go to that rally. And by the way, we're going to open the phone lines, 888-589-8840 for those of you in Virginia. John, it's great to talk to you. John Vileko, Gun Owners of America. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
And if the blind lead the blind, both will fall into a pit. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Gay and lesbian activists, along with their bisexual allies, are about to face hostile opposition. Not from those pesky evangelicals, whom many expect. It will arise from amongst their own regressive ranks. There is much conversation today in the activist community that challenges LGB orthodoxy, and this challenge is coming from transgender activists. They assert if gender is on a spectrum, then homosexuality and bisexuality don't really exist because they can only exist where sexuality is binary. In transgenderism, lesbianism, gayness, and bisexuality are a ruse because you can't really be male or female. The LGBs are getting trouble from the T's.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hello, I'm Gary Roby, host of Call to Worship, heard each Sunday on American Family Radio. This one-hour program will lead you in a special time of worship and praise. We will focus on God's Word, spoken, and in music. Call to Worship has a different topic each week as we glorify God together. Be sure to join us at 5 a.m. Central each Sunday for a call to worship right here on American Family Radio.
I refer to your part-time job as what you do outside of your home, outside of your family, to generate an income for your family. Your full-time job is what you do within your family. We're on the go consistently, people hustling, trying to get it. And I just want to remind everybody to whoa, pump the brakes. Make sure that we are not neglecting our families in the process.
Tune in to the Hamilton Quarter, weekdays at 5 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Show up at your full-time job, ready to work.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. One of the titles the King or Queen of England carries is Defender of the Faith. Well, they're not doing it very well anymore, but America has a political leader who is. Last week, President Trump issued proclamations defending prayer in public schools, which has virtually been stamped out by activist judges and enemies of the truth. He also issued a presidential directive that Christian service organizations must no longer be discriminated against in receiving grants from federal agencies. For decades, Christian service organizations have been shut out of full participation in public life by religious bigots with power. No more. For all his faults, President Trump has been the best friend the kingdom of God has had since Ronald Reagan. God deserves thanks, and the president deserves our prayers.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Trump celebrated National Religious Freedom Day yesterday with several initiatives aimed at ending discriminatory federal treatment of faith communities. He described his administration's commitment to school prayer and other protections by declaring, quote, "We will not let anyone push God from the public square," unquote. Fortunately, troubling as it is, such religious intolerance here pales by comparison with that Christians are experiencing elsewhere. On Wednesday, Open Doors USA published new research indicating that 260 million people are being heavily persecuted globally simply for following Jesus, and millions more face systematic, if less severe, repression. The president deserves great credit for his sustained efforts on behalf of religious liberty. Real care must be exercised, however, that we not, in its name, protect and enable those who insist that the free exercise of their faith entitles them to deny others that foundational freedom. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. I actually still want to talk about this Virginia thing. I'm really got my dander up about this. And I'm wondering if any of you, surely those of you in Virginia are gun owners, are at least aware of this, concerned about it, have an opinion about what Ralph Northam has been doing, and the Democrats in the House and Senate in Virginia. So that's, I really like to talk about that. I have a lot more things to tell you in regard to that. Our phone number is 888-589-8840. If you've seen something, something interesting, or something caught your eye, if you're on your way to the rally or you have some thought about it, give us a call. It's 888-589-8840. An interesting story came my way just last week about New Zealand. You remember that was there was that terrible mass murder in New Zealand. And then at the time, there's a very, what you may not know, because how would you, Trevor Loudon, good friend and a frequent guest, is from New Zealand. Trevor follows the communist movement throughout the world, and New Zealand is a hotbed of communism. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? That's just a kind of a background. And long before this story ever cropped up, their new prime minister is hates guns. She's extremely, I don't know much more about her other than she's extremely liberal. She took the lead after that shooting to try to ban weapons and take away assault weapons in New Zealand. So with that in mind, this is a report from the BBC about what happened in New Zealand, and then I want to tell you a particular story about what happened there. Let's listen.
New Zealand will ban all military-style semi-automatic weapons.
Why would you need a semi-automatic rifle? They're there to kill multiple targets. Most people are fine, but you always get that one, and we had that one. And he came in here, and he killed, between the two mosques, I should say, he killed 51 people.
I believe that it's a quick fix for something that's not really broken. People enjoy shooting, they enjoy shooting a variety of firearms, and now they're more limited in the type of firearms they can use. And that's because the government has decided to dictate that's what we have to do, to supposedly make people safer. But I don't believe that's the answer. So to me, it doesn't make sense.
We've had a really world-class, I would say almost the best in the world, history of low firearms crimes in New Zealand because we regulate the people, not the firearms. But none of this legislation is doing that.
It's upset some people, but the majority of the people have accepted it. At the end of the day, the law has been changed. It had to change. Not just because of what happened here in this mosque, but for the best thing for New Zealand.
And I remember that New Zealand is a neighbor to Australia, and that's the great outdoors. I mean, this is where hunters go. And so there are a lot of guns in New Zealand and in Australia, and they feel as strongly about their firearms as we do. As a matter of fact, I was just talking to a friend of mine who was on an overseas trip, and she was with a bunch of Australians, and she was talking about how much they love President Trump because they love what he's doing. They love that he's fighting for freedom. And in New Zealand, here's the story. There's a young man. I'm not even sure I can properly pronounce his name. Remember, there are tons of Dutch in New Zealand and South Africa and that part. His name is Dutch, and it's Dewey De Boer. De Boer I can handle, but the Dewey I'm not sure about. He's a young guy. He's probably, I'm guessing, in his mid to late 30s. He's got three little children, beautiful wife. There's a picture of them on their front lawn. And his home, as a result of this ruling, which sounds so good, doesn't it? Rounding up assault weapons, was raided. And he tells the story. He says half a dozen armed police officers swarmed in the front door of his home with holstered sidearms as several more ran around the sides of the house. They later called for more backup as the house was larger than their average size state house. I got the impression they'd never had a raid on a middle-class suburban home before. Everyone on the property was detained, read their rights, and questioned separately. I opted to call a lawyer who advised me to refuse to answer questions. So what he did was he had uploaded to his website an image of his .22-caliber lever-action rifle. It was a replica of a famous 19th-century cowboy gun, and it's called the gun that won the West. So it's an old gun. It's a replica. And he actually testified, or he gave written testimony to the New Zealand gun law about the effect of this law on things that had nothing to do with what they thought they were doing. He said, my .22 caliber semi-automatic would likely remain legal. Anyway, that's too much information. Basically, they tore his house apart looking for this. And it wasn't on the property, so they just tore up the whole house, interrogated everyone, and frightened the family. And he said the officer told me I had posted about it online, which I had, in my public written submission against the Firearms Amendment Act. That submission was shared on several blogs and social media. I had used the firearm as an example to prove the legislation was not targeting military-style assault weapons, as the media, Prime Minister, and her cabinet repeated ad nauseum. The vast majority of firearms affected by the legislation were just like mine. And so that's just a cautionary tale of what's behind this. It is not what you think. They make it sound like, you know, lives are going to be saved, school children will be saved in school, and it's completely the opposite of what they are claiming. They're the people that want to take away our guns have a very different thing in mind besides creating a safe world. All right, I want to talk to you, especially those of you in Virginia. So the rally starts this morning at 11. It's not too late to go, by the way. And if you want more information about it, it's vcdl.org. V as in victory, C, D, and L as .org. Okay, let's go to Darlene in Virginia. Good morning, Darlene.
Yes.
So, what's going on there?
Hey, good morning. I just want to say I listen to you all the time. Thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you, Darlene.
My husband was going to attend the rally, but one of our state senators posted on Facebook that it was a setup and that Antifa was coming. And because they have that gun-free zone, all of those people in that area, they can't. It's not just guns. It's any kind of weapon at all. And so they can't have anything. And so if Antifa does come, those people are going to be sitting ducks. So my husband decided not to go.
Darlene, how about what you heard John talk about outside that fence, you can go and you can carry your weapon and be right there to do whatever you need to.
As I said, they have closed down all the streets around the Capitol. So there's no way to get away from there except to run. And as he was stating, there's only going to be three exits out of that area. So even if the people from Antifa were outside of those gates shooting in, how are those people going to get out without getting hit? I'm glad he didn't go. I'm sorry, but I don't see how, even if we use our rights with guns, it's going to save all of those people.
Well, of course, you're projecting, Darlene. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. This is the point, you know, this is the decision we all have to make, right? About taking risks and when things are worth taking them, and the fact that at some point we are going to have to all pay a price. I'm not saying your husband has to go and pay the price. I'm just saying it's a crossroads. So the whole issue is if they destroy this rally, they will have had a great victory. And maybe that's what they're aiming to do. I'm curious to know. I wanted to ask John this, and I want to know what you think. I get the impression, you know, the police in Charlottesville were told to stand down. I wonder about the police. The police in Virginia seem to be a lot more law and order tough. Do you think they'll be watching Antifa and not allowing what you are, what your state senator has? By the way, who's your state senator?
The senator who said that. What's her name, Joe? Ashley what? What's the senator's name? Ashley what? Amanda Chase was the senator who said that.
Is she a Democrat or Republican?
She's a Republican from Chesterfield.
Okay. Well, you know, they're
not getting her in trouble.
Yeah.
Anyway,
well, no. If she said that publicly, people will know about it. So it's not like a secret.
Right. We have heard from the counties that have gone sanctuary that most. All of these sheriff's offices and police officers are not going to abide by this mandate of guns, you know, getting rid of guns. They're not going to enforce it. They're not going door to door. We have several people that we know who are in law enforcement, and they have said they are not enforcing it.
Yeah, but of course, so you know that they're,
right,
you know, they're put, you know, they're putting it on the line. You know what's going to happen with that. They're going to... Now, the sheriffs are publicly elected, but some of those police officers, It's really a battle. It really is a battle, Darlene. And I think you and your husband are going to have to decide, you know, how far you're willing to take it. And so is every other single person in Virginia who carries about how far you're going to go to fight this. And you've got a lot of brave guys. No question. I've got a tape. Actually, I would have played it, but I think I'd rather talk to people this morning. One of your sheriffs made just the most bold statement publicly about he is not going to enforce these unconstitutional laws, but it's going to be a battle. And so all of us, it's coming to you first, but it's coming to all of us, and we're going to have to decide just how hard we're going to fight. I thank you, Darlene. You know, the fact that he's Governor Northam has shut down the streets around the Capitol, they're trying to make it impossible. They're trying to make it impossible for citizens who have every right, American citizens, every single one of you has a right to defend yourself with a firearm. So they block off the streets so you can't come. They fence it off and say the people around the Capitol can't carry. They're trying to make it nearly impossible and doing a really good job of it, aren't they? Exercising their power to shut down the will of the people. Exercising their power so that you can't even protest. You can't even protest because it's all shut off. It's fenced off. The streets are closed. I think this is amazing. I think that would make me want to go more. Actually, that's what I think. All right, let's go. Judy in Virginia. Good morning, Judy. What do you think? Good morning, Judy. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Cindy. I'm sorry. Yeah, I work downtown, and I live in Richmond. And I was up at the Capitol walking around during lunch about a month ago, and the organizers of the rally had speakers. And one of them was a Cuban immigrant who fled during Castro, and they took their guns. And they came to their door. They took the guns. They said, if you want to use them for hunting, you can come to the police station. And he says he's often asked why they didn't fight back to Castro. And he said, it's because they de-armed us.
Well, yes. So yes. Thank you, Judy. Absolutely true. Thank you. And that's the story all over the globe. That's the story all over the globe. This is the way the left works. They disarm. They disarmed black Americans. I think I wish I could be more specific about this, but the part in our history, they decided blacks should not have guns and they couldn't protect themselves either, and the inner cities became so dangerous. Listen, it's a pattern. That's how totalitarian governments take control, and the battle right now is in Richmond. Let's go to Terry. Terry, you have some friends there today?
Yeah, Sandy, hi.
Hi, good morning.
This is Terry, and Sandy, I love your show. I listen to you every day, and thank you for doing what you're doing. Yeah, I live in Richmond, Virginia, and I don't plan on attending the rally. I've got to work today, but anyway, the thing was that I wanted to tell you was the Antifa people are supposed to be there, but they're marching with these, you know, the Second Amendment rights. They don't want their guns taken away either.
I read that. Yeah. I'm not sure how reliable that is, but I did read that. I guess the proof will be in the pudding, won't it, Terry? We'll see about that. Let me go to Melissa. Melissa, you have just a minute or so here. You were told to turn around. You were on your way?
I was on my way. We were told to turn around by family, and the reason that we turned around is because we were told also it was a false flag, and the juxture of the city was really tight. The thing is that the streets in Virginia are really tight, but I'm from New York, and when we got here to Virginia, the people we found were kind of sleepy. They're really great people, and we're like, wake up, wake up. It's coming your way, because this is why we moved to Virginia. I've been to a whole bunch of Second Amendment meetings, and I'll tell you, it's a soft underbelly. These people in the councils have been set up to do this. It's coming across the United States. I watched they've done everything from change times of the meetings to change our speaking times from 3 minutes to 2 minutes. They changed it from 7 o'clock in the evening to 2 o'clock in the afternoon within 24 hours, so we would not show up, and we came en masse.
Yeah, Melissa, oh gosh, what was that, New York?
I'm from New York, but I'm now in Virginia.
Okay, no, I got that. We're out of time. Melissa, listen, take care. And I guess I would thank you so much. I guess to all of you, I'd say just be bold and be brave, but be smart. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.